couple of weeks ago, I had an opportunity to interview a guy by the name of Peter Harris. He's the co-founder of Arosha International, which he started alongside his wife, Miranda. Arosha is a global network of conservation organisations working together to care for the environment, works across six continents, 20 countries, including New Zealand and Australia, protecting 1.2 million hectares and 470 threatened species across land, sea and skies. Now, in October 2019, Peter and his wife Miranda and two close friends, another couple they knew, were in South Africa when their car went off a bridge and landed in the river below. His wife Miranda and his two friends were killed in the crash. Jax, I think you had a text that sort of is almost lining this interview up.
Oh, yes, yeah, for sure. So Sally texts through, and Sally's text was basically just saying, here's the question I've asked for years. She says, why do good people have such bad things happen to them and a-holes get away with everything and don't? Where's the balance and justice, and why would a loving God allow this? Doesn't paint him in a very good light. I've always wanted to know this. It's a hard one, I know. That's from Sally. Thank
you. That is a super, super hard question. Peter and the driver were the only ones to survive, so I began by asking him what the journey of the last few years had been like.
Yeah, well, I think journey's maybe a good way of putting it. Obviously, there's been a lot of physical recovery, and that's always part of these things. In one way, it was strange, but one thing that many people who've been bereaved will tell you is that they feel that their life has utterly changed while everybody else's hasn't. But in fact, the world went into lockdown about 3 months after I was, you know, back to my home.
Yes.
So the world didn't. And even during those months beforehand, I was living with a friend who was a medic, who had been working globally, and he was tracking this thing. And he said to me in mid-January, this is going to be quite something. So we had a bit of early warning in our house, and the world was as strange as everybody else's. So in one way, that was, the whole world was in a kind of grief, I think.
Yes, yes.
So that was one aspect which was interesting. But as everybody will tell you, they live these things their own ways. Obviously, the suddenness and the injuries complicated it. The fact that Miranda and I had been married for 43 years and worked together meant that it was a massive loss. We met each other very young at college. So, you know, I think the funny thing is, maybe, I don't know how this works, but God builds healing into creation in all kinds of ways. And I had the opportunity to be in creation, living on the edge of the Salisbury Plain, which is ironically a huge military training area, but it's completely free of people for miles and miles and miles. And I was able to, once I got walking again, get walking and be out there. And that was very healing. And then time is a created thing, as you know, and time is a healer. And things grow around the trauma you've had.
Yes. This is a show around questions, and questions that come up around faith and questions we might put to God. I remember in Lee Strobel's Case for Faith, which is a book I read really early on in my own Christian journey. I came to faith later in life in my late 20s and was reading that book. And one of the first interviews he did was with a guy called Charles Templeton, who used to do big evangelical, big crusades. With Billy Graham, and had sort of moved to a place of first agnosticism and then atheism. And the question that really just tripped him up was suffering. He just couldn't get his head around it. It ended up being the thing that he just couldn't, I guess, solve or reconcile. Did you have any moments like that yourself along the way? Have you had moments where you've called into question God's nature, or just found that a really difficult thing to process? And if not, what's helped you to not do that? Because you sit here now and we're having quite an animated conversation earlier just about what God's doing and other things that are happening in Arosha, and we'll get to some of that. But what's kind of helped you along the way as you've...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is the big question in a way. It's interesting, the tremendous advocate for environmental things in the media, Sir David Attenborough, I know for a fact that it's been probably the thing he's wrestled with hardest when just looking at nature, the what appears to be the sheer cruelty of it a lot of the time. You know, these bugs that eat other bugs out from the inside.
Red in tooth and claw.
Yeah, all of that, you know. Mm. And if Haldane is right, and the thing you learn most about God is when you look at creation, he's got an inordinate fondness for beetles. A lot of those beetles behave in abominable ways, don't they? So suffering seems to be kind of written into the whole thing.
Yes.
I have to say, and this may be disappointing for some who are listening, and it's just my own response, I never lost a sense that I was living in God's world, at least intellectually. I mean, I lost my sense of everything. One of the things about trauma is a thing called anhedonia. So you lose your feeling or joy in everything.
Okay.
And I did.
Yeah.
So I can't say that I had any sense of God's presence or closeness through the early months or even early years. But the sheer logic of what world are we living in, and if it's God's, he knows what he's doing, even if I haven't got the faintest idea, never really left me. I sometimes think of it like kind of cold scaffolding. You build it round yourself. It doesn't comfort you, but it definitely held me up, as did a lot of other people.
Yes.
And the paradoxical thing was, it was hard to deny the goodness of God, even in the worst of it. I wasn't brain damaged, which I should have been. None of those who died, my wife and my dear friends, were half dead or disabled or, do you know, there was a lot of mercy. And then there was tremendous mercy from all the Christian community in South Africa who rallied around my family, put them up, provided them meals, cried with them, you know, ran them around. You know, there was just evidence of God's goodness shot through the whole thing, which you can't make any sense of. I don't make any sense of it. But in my own case, I wasn't really struggling that way. It's quite funny. The Christian love language is to give you books, seems to me. So
bacon and egg pies. When my father passed away, I don't think I've seen an array of bacon and egg pies like we got delivered to our home. It just seemed to be somebody's love language out there. Must have got about a dozen of them.
I think in the UK it's lasagna, but whatever it is, lasagna and books. Anyway, you know. So of course people gave me a million books about grief and grieving and what,
right,
like David Brooks, the New York Times journalist, said when he became a Christian, you know, he was given about 300 books, only half of which were Surprised by Joy by C.S.
Right,
Lewis. So, you know, there were some common themes. And some of them I could identify with, and I couldn't read a lot of them to begin with. I couldn't read for a start. I had double vision. But I identified with some of them, but I didn't really identify with those where people were angry with God, because I personally wasn't. I think it's totally legit if people are.
Yes.
I think God can take all our questions and more.
Yes.
You just don't necessarily get pat answers from God, do you?
No, the Psalms are good evidence that you get to say some pretty bald statements to him and really put your anguish out there.
Yeah, and I think that's important. I think like Ellen Davis, the Old Testament scholar, says, I found this really important, that the Psalms and that kind of literature in the Bible are so ugly because everything belongs within the conversation. I think, like with a child, you know you're in trouble when everybody stops talking. If everybody's still talking, at least you can go somewhere, even if what you're saying or hearing is, in inverted commas, unacceptable. You've got to say it anyway. And I put all the questions out there, but I never expected to get... If the church could have solved the issue of suffering with a little neat book or 5 points or what, they would have done it a long time ago. And none of them have.
Just loving hearing this interview. So I'm hearing this for the first time, and what a man Peter Harris is. Just a really great reminder how suffering is a constant for everyone. It's such a part of the human condition. But through all the senseless grief, if you look, there is beauty and goodness and love and healing, and how time is so kind. I'm loving this conversation. What an incredible, incredible interview.
Yeah, well, there is a part two, Jax, and I got this opportunity a couple of weeks ago. Peter is the
Co-founder of Arosha International. They're a conservation, a network really of conservation organisations. And really though, we talked about the car accident in 2019 that killed two of his best friends and his wife. And he was the only survivor. The driver of the car was lost as well. He's been working with musicians to increase awareness about what's going on in the environment. Music's a great way to have conversations and to augment conversations and to say certain things that can't be understood any other way. So I asked him next what role music had played in the processing of his own grief.
I've had quite a life with the arts from the very beginning. I went to a cathedral school and, my degree was in literature and stuff. So, yes, I've thought about this. I think my response to music has been much more whole since the accident. And I listen to a huge amount of it, primarily classical music, but all sorts, actually. I'm very omnivorous musically. And it's often how I end my day, very consciously sitting and listening to music. And I think that it's always going to be one of the ways in which healing comes, because I think many artists are people who live with pain, and that's why they express themselves those ways.
Yes,
because it's how they need to do that, and I think that pain resonates, doesn't it, with others?
Yes,
in ways you can't explain. It's like, again, the very arts writing of scripture is so true, the poetry of it, the music of it, the language of it. And much of it is lament, because we have to remember, you know, the average expectation of life in Jesus' time was 23 years for an adult male. He was doing pretty well.
Yes.
And so the societies have traditionally been places of suffering and pain. We've lived in an extraordinarily privileged last 100 years, some of us, in the Western world. But mostly human life has been shot with pain and difficulty and grief. And you see that in the artistic output of believers.
And I guess you've seen that, given that Arosha works right around the world. You've gone to places where people are living in much more harrowing and circumstances that don't enjoy any of the comforts.
We've had that privilege. But again, the paradox that they're often people who are much more full of joy than those who would have what a consumer society would say would be a comfortable life. Don't ask me to explain it, but it's just true. Anybody will tell you about the irrepressible joy that you find in the most strange and poor contexts around the world.
So perhaps using music to pivot, what have some of the themes been that musicians are trying to capture, the ones that you talk about forming a bit of a relationship with, actually mobilising artists to say, capture something of what we're seeing going on in the environment, the glory of it, how wonderful creation can be, but also the grief that's happening there.
I think attentiveness, they're certainly wanting to be attentive in a new way to creation and what creation is saying. I think of a song like The Night Sky that Sarah Groves and Andy Gallahorn wrote.
Oh, the night sky blankets the earth, sweet harbinger of holiest birth. Nothing humbles or shows you your worth like the night sky, like the night.
And I think gratitude, and I find that in the work of Sandra McCracken and her songs, in Feast and in Fallow, is one of her songs that I love. And we will feast in the house of Zion. And then, my friend Gareth Davis, with a blessing that he wrote, may you find your way blessed. I think they're just rooting it in rhythms of creation and in realities of creation, and not just in abstract thought about doctrine, and certainly not in the value of how am I feeling today and what does that do for where I am with God, which is kind of interesting, but it may have more to do with the weather or what you had for breakfast than anything profoundly theological.
From the soul in despair to those who comfort and share, those who are poor and dispossessed, may you find your way blessed.
days where you almost feel like writing a bit of an angry psalm of your own around the state of the world, the state of the environment. I know Arosha's work in conservation and things is amazing, but you know, do you sometimes wish more people had come on board and joined you earlier? And you've been sounding this kind of note for a while, and finally people are getting it. But I imagine back when you started in the 1980s, you must have felt a bit lonely doing that.
I think the angry environmentalist is a bit of a cliche, and no, I wouldn't be that attracted to that. I keep my poetry pretty quiet, but a little bit of it is out there. And I have put in poetry some of the contradictions that you see. I'm thinking of a poem I wrote about bird migration north and south across the Straits of Gibraltar in Western Europe.
Right.
And how you can see it like God's breathing, the way that year in and year out these birds are going above, southwards and northwards. But going underneath them, east to west, is all the stuff that's going through the Straits of Gibraltar on the ships, including illegal waste that's being dumped in West Africa. And all of the dolphins struggling with the sonic sadness of the waters. And we know the Mediterranean is in desperate state. So, yes, I think sometimes, you know, I think if I can quote my own poetry, there are wings for this, there are no words.
That's awesome, Peter. I was meaning that almost metaphorically, like have you carried that grief the way a psalmist would? So to find out you've actually written poems about this is, quite amazing.
I call them poems. Yeah. Whether anybody who actually knows about poetry would call them poems, but whatever, yeah.
Are there reasons to be positive? Are there reasons to be optimistic about projects that are happening around the place? What sort of keeps you energised and encouraged in the work of Arosha?
Yes, I mean, as you know, good news doesn't sell media, so there's lots to be encouraged about, but you don't often hear about it. There are some astonishing people doing very practical and wonderful things, and I could tell you many stories. And even those who are not, if you like, the traditional tribe of environmental people, I think there are genuine attempts in the finance and business world now by Christians and others to try to deploy capital in a way that is regenerative and not degenerative. And that could bring a scale to things which could really make a difference. Optimistic is a slippery word. I wouldn't say we're guaranteed good outcomes.
Okay.
But I think what we are guaranteed is the possibility of doing good things if we wish to. And that's really important that we all figure out collectively, not me in my life, but collectively, how to live in God's creation in such a way as it's sustained and not depleted for multiple reasons.
Mm. Well, look, I know doing things collectively is very much sits at the heart of what Arosha does, but just personally it's been wonderful to meet you, and just thank you for faithfully starting that up, co-founding it all those years ago when you were sort of following those nudges, that impulse to do it. Just wonderful work.
Amazing interview with Peter Harris, talking around why getting through grief. And I hope Sally, who texts through earlier with that question about, you know, why do bad things happen to good people, kind of talking around that as well, and how we get through those dark, hurdy times in our life. Absolutely gorgeous. Love that conversation.